The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm fabulous. It's November.
It is definitely November. Happy November. November 1st.
Yes.
Do you know whose birthday it is today?
Today? No, I don't.
Richard Schwinn. Happy birthday, Mr. Schwinn.
Have a schwinderful day.
Have a schwinderful day. So I would like to correct a big mistake that I made on our show last week.
A mistake?
We don't do that. See, I know. We don't usually. And I really try to never mess up somebody's name. But I said last week that our second guest, I don't know, sometime between our first guest and when actually Dr. Danoff came on, I said, we'll be right back with Dr. Dudley Smith. Now, I have no idea where that came from. I know that his name is Dr. Dudley Danoff. I feel terrible. No one likes to have his name, you know, like mispronounced or worse, the wrong name altogether. So big apology. Dr. Danoff was a really gracious and informative guest. I enjoyed him, actually. He was good. Did you get any feedback on penis power?
No.
Okay. This one's a little more serious. Secondly, I would like to thank all those people who have contacted me about my interview with Mike King. Unbelievable. Yep. Unbelievable.
That was a great interview.
Thank you. I am humbled and honored. I've been invited into so many lives of so many people who appreciated Mike's story, and they've since shared theirs with me. Having had almost no exposure to bipolar disorder, I had no idea of the incidence of this issue. None. I'm learning. I believe Mike's journey might be a roadmap for many others to begin healing. So what's really heartening is how the cycling community is reaching out to its own other cyclists, past and present. They need help. They're often too broken, as Mike would say, to note or ask for it. And others who can have started to step up to help these special people. I found that the world of cycling is much smaller and closer than I originally thought. On what I believe is an important note, the LAB this week published two blog entries that try to justify their position in not coming to the assistance of Cherokee Shill in Kentucky. Did you read this?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So the LAB has every right and, in fact, a duty to take a stance and offer an opinion, but their choice was seen by a great many folks as a sign of an organization that has lost its primary focus. That of defending the rights of cyclists. If you would like to read the blog entries, they are available on the LAB website at bikeleague.org. I was shocked, and I heard from a lot of people who said, oh, that's it. If I wasn't a lifer, and a lot of people were lifetime members and don't know how to get out of their membership. I mean, they're that serious about what they wrote. And, you know, this isn't the first time that the league has declined to defend somebody who's been in need.
Right. She obviously could use the support of an organization like that. And maybe this is a way that they're going to learn from people that are lifetime members that it's time to maybe change their direction.
And maybe it's the leadership of the organization. Maybe there's too much lobbying. I don't know what's going on. Remember, they are in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if the LAB's commentaries led to the show that aired on Thursday morning on NPR, but the opportunity for cycling to be front and center on a very popular talk show takes us to our discussion this evening. Did you hear the Diane Rehm show?
I didn't get to hear it, okay. But I did follow through Twitter and lots of comments and follow-up.
I like Diane Rehm, and I like her show. I listen to it when I can. She devoted the entire first hour of her show on Thursday to the issue of bicyclists and motorists and the interaction between the two of us. She had several guests, mostly sort of on the side of cycling, but there may have been a disconnect with the topic. And that's sort of the way I saw it, which was how cyclists could be safer on the streets. So if you want to hear the whole interview, you can get the podcast at drshow.org or from NPR and just go to the Diane Rehm Show from the October 30th show. It's the first half of the show. I decided to throw the discussion open, rather continue it maybe on our show. So instead of just having it stop with the Diane Rehm Show, we're just going to keep on going with it. To that end, we have several guests, including Mark Fries, who is the executive director of the Inland Empire Biking Alliance in Redlands, California. We also have our friend Carrie Caffrey. She is Miss Cycling Savvy herself and one of the smartest, most informed people I know. And finally, Ron Girth, who is an avid cyclist. He's retired. He spent many years in the Midwest leading rides, working on cycling projects, and who, by the way, just canceled his longtime membership in the LAB, which is part of some of the topics that came up on Facebook all week. People were very, very angry at some of the things the LAB said. Meanwhile, each guest will be asked the same set of questions. Each will speak with me individually. So I hope we can expand on Diane Rehm's show, perhaps come to some new conclusions about safety education and getting more cyclists on the road going forward. We will be able to hopefully fit in a bit of news. We have some good news. Let's head on down to Orlando and speak with my colleague, friend, and Cycling Savvy's founder, Carrie Caffrey. Carrie, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Thank you, Diane. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
We all listened to the hour-long conversation on NPR's Diane Rehm Show on October 30th, and we all came at the subject of cyclists on the road and their safety from a slightly different angle. There are going to be four of us on the show this evening besides me, and I wanted to talk with you to get not only your take on the show, but how it might have been different or better. The discussion was prefaced with an online survey. It included questions about how you bike, how often, whether you feel safe on the road, how many folks were involved in crashes, whether cyclists or motorists were at fault. And do you think it took the right approach to the original topic, which was sharing the road, adapting to a new culture of cycling? That's my first question.
You know, it seemed like there were almost two different things going on there, because the report painted a picture of bicycling crashes increasing. And I think that initially, you know, right off the bat, the panelists did a good job of, or at least one of the panelists did a pretty good job of putting that report into perspective, which is, well, if you look at the long-term trends, bicycling crashes are actually decreasing, that there's just oscillations in those trends. And so there isn't, you know, some big spike. It's not something to be alarmed about. We might want to investigate why we have those oscillations. However, overall, the trend seems to be decreasing. And then the other thing that was kind of missing was a discussion of vehicle miles traveled. I mean, how many more miles are bicyclists traveling? So it's, you have to put those numbers in those perspectives. And I think that really right off the bat, that kind of, that was kind of put to rest, which I thought was really good.
There were five people who sort of weighed in on the different topics. And I, from that perspective, I thought she allowed, you know, a lot of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of different perspectives. The one thing that I would have really liked to have seen would have been somebody who is actually an expert in bicycling safety, someone who's an expert in crash causes and behaviors that cause crashes, because that's really, if you're going to have a conversation about bicycling safety, that's kind of the most important thing to talk about, is what causes crashes and how can we avoid them.
Do you have somebody in mind who might have been a good person for that topic?
Well, I would have been a good person for that topic.
Really?
Mike Wilson would have been a good person. Preston Tyree would have been a good person. There are any number of league cycling instructors or cycling savvy instructors would have been, would have contributed sound information to that discussion.
It is true that they sort of skirted that whole issue, you know, talking about who's riding and the stop law in Idaho, you know, and all the different things. The guy, Gabe Klein, I thought he had some interesting things to say about increase in ridership and all of that. But you're right. Nobody really talked about what causes crashes, how to avoid crashes, and how to make it safer, which was sort of the subtext of the entire conversation. There really was a dissenting voice on the show, and I really would like to get your perspective on him. Jason Clark, the vice president of the Log Cabin Republicans of San Francisco, is a proponent for something called Proposition L, Restore Transportation Balance Coalition. His claim is that 79% of the households in San Francisco don't have a bicycle commuter. Why should the city be held hostage to what cyclists want? How would you respond to that?
You know, I went to that website after listening to the show, and I didn't have time to really read through the proposition. It sounded sort of like a backlash kind of a thing. You know, it sounds like, okay, well, we feel like the city's doing too much to promote bicycling, and they're taking away street space, and you know, we don't like it. We don't like the bicyclist behavior, whatever it was. There were several different threads going on there. I think that you have to listen to that point of view because, you know, on the one hand, he said a few things that were interesting and probably worth listening to, which was, you know, these painted lanes don't make any sense. They wiggle all over the place. And there are a few examples of that I've actually seen pictures of where I can understand that would be confusing to motorists as well as to some bicyclists.
He also made a comment about the response time of ambulances because of the narrowing of streets. That was him, right?
Yeah, I have no data point on that. I'm not sure. You know, I've heard those comments before as well with regard to traffic calming. And I don't know. That's one of those things that sounds really good to say to make your point. The validity of it, I don't know. I can't comment on it. I felt like, you know, his whole argument seemed to be, you know, get the cyclists out of the way, get their infrastructure out of my way. And that doesn't really lend to a dialogue about the priorities and what's happening. And maybe there are some valid points in there, but when it gets framed in terms of, well, I'm just mad because they're spending money on this and it gets in my way and slows me down.
Right. Right. Well, something about Proposition L2 had something to do with not lingering on sidewalks. And I was wondering how that had anything to do, unless I'm reading the wrong proposition.
I didn't read that part.
Yeah. It sort of is tied up in a whole bunch of stuff. If you and this is in the, you know, in the best world idea way, if you had the opportunity to put together a show like Diane Rehm did and bring on the people who would make a conversation, and including you, maybe Mike, who else might have been able to offer some constructive information from a, you know, like different areas? What would you focus on? Not just, they didn't really focus on anything in some ways. They sort of were all over the place.
Yeah, they were kind of all over the place. I'm not answering your question with this comment, but I felt like that was kind of indicative of how the whole American culture deals with bicycling. I mean, we're really, people don't know. They don't know what they don't know. What they think is safe is oftentimes 180 degrees opposite of what actually is safe. And so it's not surprising that there wouldn't be a clear direction to the conversation because the Diane Rehm show may not know who they should talk to and what questions they should ask because the whole, you know, cycling is just shrouded in all this mythology and strange fear-based thinking that I don't know that they would have the direction to know who to ask and
the
who to talk
survey
to.
Itself was pretty obvious that whoever wrote the survey didn't exactly know how to couch the questions to make them, you know, appropriate to the topic in some ways.
You know, to be honest with you, that's one of the better surveys I've seen.
Well, and it's still up there online, by the way. It is still available. You can go get it. I'm talking with Carrie Caffrey. She is the founder of Cycling Savvy down in Orlando, Florida. A wonderful program. If anybody in your area wants to learn how to teach, she teaches teachers. She teaches people how to ride on the road and is very successful with her program. The last thing I want to talk about is the LAB, your favorite organization. Right now, they're not the favorite of a lot of people. They published a couple of blog entries this past week explaining their position on not defending Cherokee Shill in her case in Kentucky. The first question I have for you is, what is your understanding of what the LAB is tasked to do?
You know, I haven't been a member for a long time, Diane.
But when you were?
Well, you know, I had always thought that it was an organization that was primarily looking out for the interests of bicyclists and defending the rights of bicyclists to use our roads and our traffic lanes. You know, I first became acquainted with the league through the TS-101, which at the time was called Road One, and the LCI program, and it seemed I would expect that if you're teaching people safety strategies that require them to control traffic lanes and stay away from the edge of the road, that you would also back those people up when they run up against our culture, which again believes that that's not safe or legal or you shouldn't get in the way. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay. Well, and that certainly was the response back, was that the LAB took the wrong position on not defending Cherokee Shill. And I have a recollection, I did not go back and research it, of something similar happening to a guy, I think, in Texas, right?
Reed Bates, yes. And okay. I followed that case very closely and wrote about it quite a bit back when it was happening. And yes, the response was the same, essentially.
Which leads us to believe that maybe the organization is doing something different from what we believe it to be doing. But I know a lot of people decided to resign from the organization this past week because of what this particular set of blog entries.
I know a number of people who left the organization after what happened to Reed. And Eli Damon had the same situation. He tried to get the league to support him. And as you recall, because you've had him on your show,
right,
he was being harassed by a police department and really having his civil rights violated.
And he won.
And he won, yeah, without the league's help.
That's right. Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly.
I think that probably what we need is to have an organization that can have a legal defense fund. It's something that our board is looking into with the American Bicycling Education Association, because it is something that we can do as a 501c3 education organization. We can have a legal defense fund. So, and I think that's something that's needed.
Do you have an opinion on the Cherokee Shill case? I know you've been following it. We've all been
following it. Yeah, I have an opinion on it. I think her civil rights are being violated. She has a right to use the road in the safest manner possible. She has a right to use the travel lanes as a vehicle driver, and that right is being denied her. And it's, you know, it's not Kentucky law. It's that particular prosecutor's interpretation of Kentucky law. Now, the law is written sloppily. It's, you know, it's open for that kind of a bad interpretation, but, you know, she has a right as a citizen to travel by her human-powered vehicle because, you know, that's what she's got, and she has a right to do it safely. And she shouldn't be required to add an extra half hour, 45 minutes, an hour to go find some back roads to ride on to get where she needs to go. You know, that's ridiculous. We don't tell motorists to find other roads to use. So, we will do whatever we can to support her. You know, I wrote the article on I Am Traffic to kind of let people know what the issue is, you know, with the shoulder. And
it's not a safe place to ride.
it not only is it not a safe place to ride, she has no legal rights if she rides there. This is what people don't understand, is that it's not that the shoulder is an option that you can use in Kentucky. Now, every state is not this way. Some states actually do give bicyclists some right-of-way on the shoulder, but Kentucky does not, and a lot of states do not. So when you are operating in a space that's not intended for vehicle use, you have no right-of-way. That means you have to yield to everyone at every driveway, at every intersection. And if you get hit by somebody who comes flying around you and makes a right turn, they're not going to be held liable. So, it's worse than just being an awful shoulder. It removes her legal rights.
Nobody's actually said that to me before. Very interesting. Very interesting. Of course, we've been watching this case since it began to unfold way back in the spring. And I'm hoping that it comes to some good conclusion. I know, she's considering a lot of options, but she shouldn't have to be considering them. She should be able to get on her bike, ride to work, and come home and not be worried. Well, Ms. Carey, it is wonderful to talk with you again, and I appreciate your opinion always. And we will talk again soon.
It was a pleasure, Diane, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Carey Caffrey, the founder of Cycling Savvy, joined me from Orlando, Florida, to talk about the Diane Rehm Show, which is our topic today. We're talking, our show is talking about another show. It never occurred to me that Cherokee Shill is not even supposed to be on that, and that her civil rights are being violated. And I'm thinking, why hasn't the ACLU stepped up? Is that something they might look at?
I would think it is. It seems like in a lot of other cases, they've taken on situations like this.
Well, we are going to take a very quick break. We are coming back to talk with a gentleman by the name of Mike Friess out in Redlands, California. And he's going to give us his interpretation of what happened on the Diane Rehm Show. We'll be right back on The Outspoken Cyclist. This is The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees. We are going to head out to Redlands, California, to talk with the executive director of the Inland Empire Biking Alliance, Mark Friess. Mark, thanks for joining me on the show this evening. It's good to talk with you.
Ditto.
Where are you?
I'm actually in Redlands, Southern California. It's about 30, 40 miles out of L.A., depending on where you start from. And we service an area of southwest San Bernardino counties and western Riverside counties.
And what does the alliance do?
Okay,
what doesn't it do?
Yeah, exactly. With advocacy. Well, it was kind of funny when we started the organization, we didn't realize how much need there was for an organization like advocacy. But once we started, we've been doing everything from safe out to school programming, education, going to city council meetings to discuss bike safety programs, and along with further infrastructure improvements, and the typical run the gamut along the whole board from county to state level.
That just dovetails nicely right into what we're going to talk about this evening, and that is the show that aired on Thursday on NPR's Diane Rehm Show, and the discussion was prefaced with an online survey, and it asked about how often you bike and whether you felt safe and how many folks were involved in crashes, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that the show took the right approach to the original topic, which was sharing the road, adapting to a new culture in cycling?
I think they attempted to, but again, I felt that the reason this all came about was because of the GHSA report from Dr. Williams. And actually, it was a program here in Southern California called Air Talk, where Dr. Williams was actually on. And that was a half-hour discussion turned into basically bike bashing.
Nice.
It turns into your typical complaining about all these, anecdotal incidences that happen on the road with cyclists not paying attention to the road or disregard the stop signs and stuff like that. This one tended to be a little bit better. I think their guests were way better than the one I heard earlier this week. I think they stayed online most of the time, but I think there's this whole GHSA. I think the underlying what they're trying to do is get a mandatory helmet law. Every time they're discussing it, he mentioned it like four or five times. And,
wow.
The data doesn't correlate. We, as advocates, we know we want to avoid collisions.
Right.
Sticking a styrofoam cup on anybody's head is not going to avoid a collision. Yeah, there's debate on, you know, I don't want to get into a helmet debate, but, you know, avoiding collisions is job one, not sitting there worrying if, you know, sticking a cup on and say, now you're okay. Because I actually feel personally, just put a cup on somebody's head and tell them, now you're safe, is a completely disingenuous.
I agree. We just had a news item. We repeated a news item from one of the blogs talking about the first thing you need to know is a bicycle helmet can help you, and you better learn how to handle your bike. That's number one, bike handling skills.
Exactly. And that's what we do. We actually started, we actually have one of the first bike ambassador programs with county, the Riverside County Public Health.
Nice.
We actually go into schools, and we actually create ambassadors of kids. And we have what we call a bicycle playground, and it's parents look at it like we're absolutely nuts putting these kids on these apparatus. But, you know, you go to these police bike rodeos, which, sorry, but they're a joke. They really are. I mean, you're having kids wind through, you know, cones, you tell them how to stop, but you're not directing towards kids' actual behavior. How are they going to behave? You're telling them you got to keep both hands on the handlebars. Kids don't do that. They won't do that. So why are you not letting them ride with one hand and getting better at it? So we do what we call a newspaper toss, you know, like we used to do when we were kids, tossing newspapers into buckets. So it's stuff like that, I think, is a better way to go than just, you know, here's the rules and now obey them and you go on your way and, oh, put this cup on your head.
Well, the GHSA was also talking about the 16% increase in bicycle deaths. And then even though Diane Rehm said that the statistic might be misleading, there's probably a better approach to discussing bicycle crashes, don't you think?
Oh, I think, first of all, Bike Portland, their rebuttal to it, and also the Alliance for Biking and Walking, Mary did a great job on that. And she actually put it in its context. I agree that I don't think they hit on it enough to say, okay, yet they're, I don't want to downplay, you know, bike fatalities and serious collisions, but the same token, you know, this again, the GSHA, they're part of the insurance company. You know, they're part of that. They do the research for insurance companies. For cars, it's better to get rid of bikes. That's what they look at it as. If we don't have bikes and pedestrians to deal with, we don't have to deal with it. You know, we don't have to pay out for it.
That's a good
point. And they know
point.
As well as we do that most of the time it's the car's fault, not the bicycle's fault.
Right. She said 54% of the people responding to the survey where they were involved in a bike-car collision, the driver was at fault. So, you know, that's fairly accurate, I would think. So there was a dissenting voice. I mean, an absolute dissenting voice on the show. Jason Clark, Vice President of Log Cabin Republicans of San Francisco. You're out in California. What is this Proposition L, and what is he talking about? 79% of the households in San Francisco do not have a bicycle commuter. Why should the city be held hostage to what cyclists want? I thought that was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think the one, Ellie was her name, she hit it on the head. She's like, well, we got the chicken and egg thing. You know, and that's basically what they're trying to do is if we don't encourage biking and walking, you know, we won't have it. So this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to keep it out of the city. And, yeah, you can still bike and stuff, but they're trying their best to discourage it. And I think that's all this is they wanted a car-centric only situation. And, you know, I don't know who's behind it. I'm sure we can make our assumptions, but I'm not going to sit here and
we can't second guess that, I guess. But the truth is San Francisco is pretty congested. It would be nice to have more bikes and less cars.
I'm sure you know. Portland, I finally made my pilgrimage to Portland this year. And I was just, you know, as a bike advocate, I actually had to put myself down a little bit and say, okay, it can't be that good. There's no way. It's just not possible. And after spending 2 weeks in Oregon and over a week in Portland, I was blown away. I was like, this is better than I ever could imagine. And it was beyond just, you know, bike lanes and bike infrastructure. It was the driver's mentality that was completely different.
How did that change up there? How did it go from what it was to what it is today? What do you think did that?
I think there's an overall societal thing there, and this is one of the things I hit on when I talk. I try not to make this a bike, ped versus car situation. I prefer to sit there and go, we have an overall societal problem. Yes, bikes don't obey laws. Yes, pedestrians don't obey laws. And no motors don't. But this is a growing problem where nobody's paying attention to the laws. And you want to talk about fatalities. Yeah, bikes can fine, let's remove them from the equation. Just look at our freeway systems. I mean, how many people die on them? Bikes and pets have nothing to do with that.
True.
You know, motors constantly are not attentive enough and not obeying the law. So why are we the focus of the problems on the road when we're the least of the problems?
So you think that Portland has put that stuff aside and just said, we're all going to be on the road. Let's figure out how to do it. And don't be pointing the fingers and saying, okay, it's the bike's fault, it's the car's fault. It's just, this is the way it is. Let's just live together.
The biggest thing they did is all their neighborhood streets are 25 miles an hour or less. All their arterials are 35 or less. That is huge. I mean, what a difference. I mean, I went to a school, I was doing partially for work, went to a school, not one kid was picked up by a car. I almost had tears in my eyes because it was like, it can happen. You know, I haven't seen it in so long, and I'm so used to Southern California driving people and kids to school. You see something like that, you're like, whoa, how did this happen?
So let me ask you a question. If you could have been in Diane Rehm's seat and been able to put together a show that would highlight cycling and the needs of cycling and pedestrians and safety, who would you have brought on to do that? I mean, some of the people were good about what they were saying, but they weren't really saying maybe what needed to be said.
Well, I think, you know, the dominating was the guy who, he got more to speak. I know Mary. I think Mary's a great advocate. The guy from Chicago.
Gabe Klein.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the guests were there. I think that the callers, as always, whenever you get callers, that last part of it is always a mixed bag because you always wind up having turns into a bike bash, and that's exactly what happened. Or you get cyclists complaining about motorist behavior, and it's like, that's not conducive to actually finding solutions. I don't know what you could do on just an hour program because you can't introduce actual measures of how to change things other only in theory and concept. And
yeah,
you don't
I
have
guess.
Enough time to have like best practices put forth.
Okay. Obviously, an hour doesn't even begin to scratch the surface, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So the last thing I want to talk to you about is, have you been following Cherokee Shill's case?
Yes, I have.
Okay. The LAB published two blog entries this week explaining their position as to why they do not want to defend Cherokee in her case in Kentucky. What do you believe the LAB is tasked to do, and what do you think of their response to Cherokee's case?
Yeah, I think there's so much aspects to this, and I understand where Lab's coming from. And at the same token, I'm a little disappointed that they aren't taking on. But at the same token, I don't know what they could do for it. I don't know, but the problem is Kentucky law's issue. The law and the system in Kentucky is a huge issue, and I don't know what they could have accomplished. I wish they would have taken it on. But then there's the underlying fact, and I don't know if anybody's going to talk about it, but I'll say it. There is the VCers or the vehicular cyclists, or, you know, take the full lane. That demographic there has been badgering and saying things about Lab and Andy Clark for years now. And there's only so much, and, you know, we're dealing with human beings here. Yes, the Lab should have a policy, and they should stick to it. But you can't expect, when you're denigrating people on the internet and calling them derogatory names, saying their, you know, Lab is in bed with the paint company and these other, you know, in the bike industry just to get more bikes on the road. You make accusations like that, you start to lose credibility. And how do you expect somebody to respond to you when you've been calling them names all the time? And yes, I know there's a lot of background with Dan and John Forrester. I get that. But you can't move forward. You're not, if this name calling keeps continuing. And I find it very disheartening that we beginner riders are denigrated and called names because they can't take the lane and they shouldn't be out on the road and stuff because they don't have proper education. But that doesn't set us forward. So that's where I stand on that thing. I think Cherokee had every right doing what she did. Would I do it? Would I take somebody out there and do that? No, I wouldn't. And I'm an accomplished rider. I've ridden numerous freeways because it's road closures and stuff. I just don't, as somebody who runs bike trains, I take kids riding all the time. It's a whole different situation when you're out there with 15, you know, 8 to 12 year olds.
Yeah, I'll bet.
you know, and I'm not going to take a kid on something like that.
Sure.
And so your mentality changes when you got kids and you do stuff like this. And, you know, I know the VCers don't like the idea of dedicated path. They call it segregation, and it's equivalent to racism, whatever. You know, I don't want to get into that debate, but I feel it's a place, and our organization feels it's a place for separated bike rails, bike trails, and other infrastructure. There is a place for it, and I'm hoping we can continue along that route. Sorry.
I appreciate your perspective. It's a good one, and I can't understand why we can't have it all kind of work. There are certain people who are happy to be in traffic, and there are certain people who are not. And no matter how much you train them, they may or may not ever be comfortable in traffic that way.
Look at our motorists don't get trained. How do you?
There is that.
And nothing's going to change in that. I mean, the people have tried for decades to try and change that, and it's not going to, because driving has become a right above a privilege, and that's just the way it is.
Well, on that note, I am going to bid you adieu. Thank you so much for joining me and giving us your perspective, and have fun in California, because I'm sure it's warmer there than it is here in Ohio.
Yes, 84 today.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. Well, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Mark Fries joined me from his office in Redlands, California. He made some good points.
More great input that, if anything, even if the Diane Rehm Show didn't get this right, at least they bring it out, and more of us are able to talk about it in a responsible and a little more timely fashion.
Well, and here we do. We have a conversation, a big conversation. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with the news and the second half of our show. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we're going to do some news. I want you to talk about getting undressed.
Okay, no, we're not going to do that.
Oh,
but
come on.
What we will talk about is a Kickstarter campaign that I think you've just taken a look at, that I found through a link through one of my rowing friends. It's a really interesting concept. Maybe it'd be better if you explain it, because it's designed more for women than...
First of all, the Kickstarter program's almost over. Second of all, they wanted $22,000. They've already raised $400,000.
Which is amazing.
It's just unbelievable. It is a very simple idea. So you slip this dress on over your shorts and whatever you're wearing. It comes up to about your waist. There's a tab that then it's attached to a long cord that you bring up through your sports bra, up over your head, and then it's got like this draw cord on it. You reach into the pockets, which are not real pockets, and push your shorts down so that you can step out of them. And then because you pulled this cord up, you also pulled the top up of this dress. You take off your top, you take off whatever else you have, and the dress is in place. It's a long video. It's 6 minutes long, but it is called The Undress. And if nothing else, that's our video of the week, just to watch it. It's very clever, but $400,000, I guess they're going to make it, huh?
Yeah, and it's a fabulous idea.
I hope they come up with more colors. I don't like the blue and black.
I'm sure when they found that much money out there, I'm sure they will.
Okay. What's your next piece?
Just an update for those of us that are listening in states that will fall back. It's time to fall back again, because it is November.
Happy November. That's right.
Happy November. So we have that in. While we're talking Happy November, one other thing. Isn't there a birthday that we just celebrated recently besides the one in the opening? Didn't we have one yesterday that we talked about?
Maybe.
Happy birthday, Diane.
Thank you, Tim.
39
Boo.
Again?
Boo. Boo.
Boo. Okay.
Remember Halloween? Boo. Yes, it was my birthday yesterday, and I had a lovely time. In fact, we had a lovely dinner with all of our friends.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Moving on. We're moving on.
Keeping in with what our show topic is all day today, with bike safety.
Yes.
Bike Portland just reported on a study that came out that cyclists aren't as visible at night as they actually think they are. Some of the studies had to do with asking if you're wearing reflective, if you're wearing just dark clothing, if you're wearing a little bit that's fluorescent. And in each case, they were nowhere near as visible as they actually thought they were. If they thought they were visible at 120 meters, they were actually visible at 70 meters.
Which is just unbelievable. I don't know how you measure that stuff, but I can believe that it's true. And you have to squint sometimes to see somebody out on the road.
And you can go to their website at Bike Portland and get all the details. But here's the important part. More reflective around your wrist, around your ankles, a reflective vest or something on your jersey, on your helmet, on your shoes. They even talk about all the different regulations in all the states. Some states require that you have the reflective on your pedals. And we know a lot of pedals don't have that.
Not anymore.
So you have all of that. And then the other is they didn't have data as far as if you have a solid light or if you have a flashing light. And your environment is so important with that also. If you're in the city, it makes a big difference. But again, each state is different as far as the requirements. But take a look at this. It's really important. Let's make sure that we stay safe now that we're riding more with it being dark out.
Yeah, exactly. It's dark an hour early. But we are going to get an extra hour of sleep, right? Okay, so this came out in June, but for some reason I missed it. And, you know, there was some talk again on the Diane Rehm show about, I think one of the last things she said was how important it was to wear a bicycle helmet, right?
Right.
Okay, this comes from BicycleSafe.com by Michael Bluejay. It was last updated in June of 2013. What's wrong with bicycle helmets? And this is the spoiler alert. It's not about not wearing a helmet. It's that we're focusing on the wrong things, because focusing on the problem of helmets distracts from what's more likely to actually save people's lives, and that is safe riding skills. His number one is to learn safe riding skills and know how to ride and know how to be defensive. And it goes on to say research has failed to show any net protective value of bike helmets. The importance placed on helmets has negative social effects. And I've heard all of these arguments before. I still believe a helmet will help save your life. There's no question. I never ride without a helmet. But the truth is, it's not the only thing that'll keep you safe.
The education of the rider in learning how to be defensive, and I cautiously use that word, but also for people driving cars. You know, if they understand what cyclists are dealing with and what they're going to do, that makes it so much easier. Right. In the helmet vein, I did see, it came out on Thursday, that there is a recall, Louis Garneau helmets. Some of the helmets that look like a golf ball that have the dimples on them, they're recalling. Apparently, in cold weather climates, they're having some issues with that. So anybody...
Because you're not supposed to play golf when it's cold.
Right.
I don't know.
So anybody in Cleveland, if you have one of those helmets, go ahead and take a look at I think, bikeretailer.com.
Bicycleretailer.com, yeah. This is a quick update on Jackie Crowell, my friend Jackie.
Yes.
I wanted to check in with her, as I promised I would do, and she said that she is going back to the doctor in December. She's going to be able to find out if she can stop her monthly chemo treatments. In all likelihood, she will, which will open her up to being more involved in cycling events. She's not going to be racing, but she wants to do some announcing and speaking. And she's currently trying to see if United Healthcare has a spot for her within the organization.
That would be great. Anybody that has that much passion for the sport,
right. I agree.
That's something that you certainly wouldn't want to pass up.
Exactly. All right. Well, that's my last one. You got one more?
Just one last one.
Okay.
And we tweeted this out earlier in the week, an article on Greg LeMond at the Star Tribune.
Yes. What a great article.
It was a really good article. And it reminded me a lot of when we talked with Mike King about being bipolar and how when he spoke about it, it allowed other people to talk about their issues with being bipolar and bring it up. And, you know, one of the quotes was, because of Lance, Greg LeMond was finally able to move forward after going through 12 years of hell.
Right. That's how they started the article. Yeah.
And as he talked about issues when he was younger, that opened up for other people and how much they were able to share and do all kinds of other things. It's a Star Tribune. Good article.
Yeah, it was a very nice article. Okay, we're just going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk with Ron Gerth about his thoughts on the Diane Rehm Show. Thanks for listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. we're back on the Outspoken Cyclist. Let's head on down to Jacksonville, Florida, and catch up with Ron Gerth. Ron, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Well, thank you for speaking with me.
It is my pleasure. You are Ron on the road right now. That's very cool that you are retired.
Yes.
I take it you have bicycles in your RV?
Yes, we have a tandem, and my wife and I each have a single.
What kind of tandem do you ride?
Commotion.
Nice, nice. I rode a Commotion for a long time. We have a Bushnell right now, but
those are wonderful.
Yeah. So I assume, as you know, all the guests tonight have been asked to please listen to the Diane Rehm Show and to come back with some of your thinking on the discussion that she had for that hour. Did you take her survey that was online, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think of that survey?
I thought it was a good start. I thought that a lot of the questions were worded not so well. It was hard to give good answers in some cases.
Okay, that's good. And the survey is still online, which we did tell our listeners that if they want to take it, you can go to the Diane Rehm Show and click on the link for the October 30th show and see it. So the show was really supposed to be about, you know, sharing the road, adapting to a new culture of cycling. Do you think the show hit its mark?
Not very well. It appeared to me that a lot of the discussion centered around separation of cyclists from the road, as opposed to living up to its title of sharing the road. I think there were issues that weren't brought up very well.
What would be a better sort of way to couch it? Would you have had fewer guests or, you know, a narrower subject?
Yes, I think that would have been very, very good. Once you start discussions regarding cycling, you get opinions all over the place. I was really surprised that she didn't take a couple more callers that had a real negative viewpoint. I kind of expected that. But what I'd like to have heard was how, again, in keeping with the title she had, how to integrate cycling to the roadways, and how drivers and cyclists should both be reacting to that.
And I think that didn't live up to its title. I would agree with that. There was some conversation about the Governor's Highway Safety Association that there's been a 16% increase in bicycle deaths, and Diane Rehm did agree that the statistic might be misleading. What do you think would be a better approach to discussing bicycle crashes than using statistics which may or may not be skewed?
Yes, I think exactly right that the numbers that that report showed aren't really showing the true numbers of people cycling. There's actually a nice decrease from the 70s till now, and including now, we're seeing a decrease in the number of deaths. But at the same time, seeing a great number of more people riding. So my approach to the show, if it had been mine, I think, would have been to, again, discuss what keeps cyclists, what avenues can cyclists do to keep safe on the road, as well as what education needs to be out there for both cyclists and drivers of motor vehicles to integrate well again.
Well, and that was one of the things that has come up in all of the discussions I've had so far on the show, and that is education. It is not being focused on as much as it should be. You're an LCI instructor? Are you an LCI instructor?
That's correct.
Are you also a CSI instructor? Do you know about
cycling?
Yet.
Yes, not yet. I intend to be.
So if you were to compare the two programs, and for those who don't know, one is the League of American Bicyclists program, the other is the Cycling Savvy program, you know the difference between the two. What do you think would be the better education for the general public? Do you believe, for example, that certain people should be integrated into the road and maybe some others should not because they're just never going to be comfortable regardless of education?
That's probably correct. I don't know that everyone would adapt or ever be comfortable with the roadway use. However, there's no question in my mind, and I think both programs do work on it. From what I've read on the website I Am Traffic, which is seems to be the foundation of the Cycling Savvy group, There's certainly better information there, much more intense information, and that can take a lot of fear away by showing people what the true use of a road can do for you, as opposed to being shuffled off to the side into a bike path or cycle track that's out of the way.
If you had been in Diane Rehm's position and were able to get an hour of such amazing time, meaning you could reach so many people in 1 hour, how would you have put a show together that would highlight cycling and maybe talk about, you know, how important safety is and bike handling skills? I mean, what kind of guests would you have brought on the show?
First, I'd like to make sure that we avoid the what almost can only be called fear-mongering of, oh, cycling's so unsafe, and you have to do this, and you have to do that to be safe. Frankly, with the numbers of cyclists out there and the accident rate, the statistics will tell you that cycling is far safer than swimming per capita by the numbers that are people that are participating. So, you know, it is a safe sport. It is a safe way of transporting yourself one place to another. So I'd like to highlight that. I'd like to make sure the cyclists, that people are aware that cyclists are legal on the road, have the rights and responsibilities, and that riders and drivers both have responsibilities to keep each other safe out there.
So maybe we need to call Diane Rehm and say, let's do another show.
Well, yeah,
I truly,
there just wasn't anywhere near enough of that discussion. Of what, you know, how do you handle it? What do drivers do when they come up on a cyclist? One of the guests I recall was saying that she says, oh, she remembers when she wasn't cycling much, and even though she did some when she drove, she said, oh, I used to be scared to death when I saw a cyclist on the road.
Right, she did say that.
Well, I'd like to hear a lot more of that discussion. You know, why did you feel like that? Did you not know how to react? Was the cyclist so much over the road that you didn't know what to do? Because that'll happen too. There's no question that cyclists have some cyclists just don't know how to ride on the road either.
That's true.
So, you know, it's very necessary, again, for everyone to understand road rules, rights and responsibilities.
The one guy who is now in New York but was in Chicago and D.C. with their bike programs or bike share programs, Gabe Klein, was talking about speed and how you're going to get to the same place at the same time no matter how fast you think you're going. You know, to gun it from the light to the next red light, you're not getting there any faster.
No, the more it seems like in the last few years my driving has slowed way down. I've gone, and when I drive a vehicle, I tend to stay within the speed limit and very, you know, maybe a couple of miles an hour over sometimes, but I really work hard to stay within the speed limits anymore. And the number of drivers I see getting very frustrated, you can tell by the attitude of their vehicle.
Right.
You know, as they're driving, and or the way they come around when they get the opportunity, that they're frustrated as heck because you're going the speed limit. Oh my gosh. And I notice it's not just cyclists. It's driving by motorhome, even on the freeway. You know, no, I don't always go 70 miles an hour. The vehicle isn't designed for that. And, you know, you do get horn honks, people thinking you shouldn't be out there because you're going a bit slower than the speed limit. It's not a minimum speed limit. It's the speed limit.
Exactly.
But yeah, exactly right. I agree with what the gentleman was saying because I see that all the time. That
sure.
Cars jump light to light and they're stopping, you know, going much faster to get to the same spot that I will at the same time.
Exactly. I have one more question. You have been following the Cherokee Showcase, yes?
Yes, very much.
You probably read the blog entries from the LAB this past week. My question to you is, do you believe the LAB is made the right choice in the Cherokee Showcase, and what do you believe the LAB is tasked to do as an organization?
I believe their task is the promotion and support of cyclists and cycling as a part of the normal traffic flow, and if they want to promote infrastructure or work toward safer roads, then they need to work very hard to be sure that, that proper designs are implemented. And I see this as a big problem. For instance, in Indianapolis, you know, the city is working very hard to achieve bicycle-friendly community status. That's cool in some ways, but a lot of that is predicated on the number of bike lanes. And a lot of the bike lanes in Indianapolis are horrible. They're door zone. They're too narrow. They don't leave you with any options at intersections. They'll be on the right side of a right turn only lane, things that just put cyclists in a very, very bad, unsafe position. And yet, oh, they've got a bike lane, therefore it's a bicycle friendly community. And I just see the opposite sometimes. Not to say I disagree with everything they do by any stretch, but in regard to the Cherokee Shell case, I think it's a deplorable statement on their part, to the point where I'm not renewing my membership to LAB. And I think that they need to make that support, because I think it's a nationally important case. Other communities will watch this and say, oh, well, we have the ability to ban someone, effectively ban someone from a road. That's just wrong.
Well, on that note, I appreciate what you I appreciate what you have to say. You know, we did speak with the head of Cycling Savvy, Carrie Caffrey, and she actually brought up the fact that it's a civil rights issue. And somehow that never clicked with me, that maybe the ACLU is something that needs to be drawn into it. Maybe it's a possibility. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something I've thought about as well. And I know there's much discussion on the some of the Facebook forums in that regard, too.
Right. Well, Ron, I hope you are enjoying retirement and having fun in Florida, because it's cold up home here in Ohio.
I heard that. I heard you might get some snow flurries even.
Shh, that S word. We don't like to say that.
Oh, no.
No. All right.
Between our just mental health and physical health, we're going to feel better, I think, staying south and west.
Yes, I think so, too. Well, you enjoy it and have a great holiday season coming up. And thank you so much for talking with me this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Ron Girth joined me from, he's in Jacksonville, Florida right now, but he's on the road.
Always on the road. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. One of the interesting takes from this is just simply putting a bike lane in doesn't all of a sudden make it better.
What an interesting comment.
We don't want to start seeing communities, okay, let's put a bike lane in and we'll just shut everybody up and then it'll be fine. That's not the case. We need to do it correctly.
Right.
We've seen time and time again in communities that it just doesn't work just by putting some paint down.
To do it, to become a bicycle-friendly community, it's sort of like, really? Okay, we're going to put in 30 miles of bike lanes, and then we can be a BFC. Really? That doesn't make sense. All right. Thanks for listening this week. I hope you found our little expansion of the Diane Reams Show interesting. I kind of liked doing this sort of three-part interview about the exact same topic. It's a little different from what we normally do. We will be back next week with a brand new show, and I'm going to be pre-recording that show so I can head on out to the Philly Expo, and then the following week I'll tell you all about it. Hope you have time for a ride and that it's warm enough. Happy Halloween. Don't forget to set your clocks back, and don't forget Tuesday is election day. If you can, vote. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.